to the Unknown Pod. Would one of the pastors on the call like to share the significance of Acts 17 and what they did in the Areopagus and talking about random everyday things and worshiping unknown gods?
All they wanted to do is talk about new things. And that's what we're here for. That's all we care about.
All we care about.
And what Asha was referring to is the name of the podcast, To the Unknown Pod, whereas Paul found a altar to the unknown God, and he went up and met with them and told them, I'll tell you about the God that you don't know.
Yeah, and so we will do that. If you're a Bitcoiner, you will hear about the unknown God that all your longings and hopes find their fulfillment in him. And if you're a normie and you've never heard about Bitcoin, we will also draw you in with hopes of financial freedom and self-sovereignty. So with that, let's start the call. Jim, will you facilitate our tweets that we're sharing?
Let's do it.
Yeah, let's go.
We're going to start with an obligatory Tolkien reference. So here we go.
Welcome to the Shire. A land of peace and tranquility, where the hobbits dwell in harmony with nature, far from the troubles of the world. Bilbo Baggins, a hobbit content with his simple life, until an unexpected adventure comes knocking at his door. Joined by the wise wizard Gandalf the Grey and a band of courageous dwarves led by Thorin Oakenshield, Bilbo embarks on a perilous journey to reclaim their homeland from fearsome dragon Smaug. From the misty forests of Mirkwood to the majestic Lonely Mountain, their quest is fraught with danger and discovery as they face trolls, goblins, and the dark forces that lurk in the shadows. Along the way, Bilbo will discover courage he never knew he possessed, forging friendships that will endure a lifetime and beyond. Join Bilbo Baggins on an unforgettable journey through Middle-earth, where adventure awaits at every turn. The Harvet, a tale of heroism, heart, and the indomitable spirit of the smallest among us. Coming soon to a theater near you.
Okay, we got some AI slop. What do you guys think?
Pretty wild and ironic. I think they tried to make a movie out of Lord of the Rings while Tolkien was still alive, and he was like aghast at the whole thing and hated the idea, and definitely hated Disney and hated Disney-fied versions of dwarves.
But, all right, well, hit us with the anti-slop. Give us an actual quote.
Speaking of knowledge and not knowing, I've been reading this book by Peter Kreeft on the philosophy of Tolkien. He's basically using the Tolkien universe as a way to kind of walk through the various categories and questions of Christian philosophy. And so I'm at his section on ethics, and he's wrestling with this question of how do you know whether or not an act is good? Is it because the consequences are good? Is it utilitarian? Do you do something regardless of what it is because the results are good? Or are there principles? Are there just basic principles of what's right and wrong, regardless of what the outcome is? And he's saying Tolkien, you know, through his story, is clearly arguing for the latter, that there is right and wrong, and you do what's right regardless of the outcome. And so he had a couple of these interesting quotes that I read last night that made me think about AI. You know, I'm just always thinking about this stuff and, you know, just feel so overwhelming and powerful and ominous. And this is a quote from the first book when the Fellowship is leaving Rivendell, the elven city of refuge up in the mountains. And Elrond, who is the leader of Rivendell, the elf, he tells them as they leave, "You do not yet know the strength of your hearts, and you cannot foresee what each may meet upon the road. Look not too far ahead." And so, I don't know, it just reminded me, especially with all the changes going on right now technologically, maybe we can be too quick to project way out into the future and not focus on what's in front of us, even though it's dark in front of us. The next quote that he gives on the same page, I think, is from Two Towers. He's talking about Éomer, who is one of the leader guys of Rohan, the horse people. He's saying, "It's hard to be sure of anything among so many marvels. The world is all grown strange." And he talks about all these crazy things going on in his world. And then he says, "How shall a man judge what to do in such times?" It's a question I'm asking myself a lot with AI and everything going on right now. And then Aragorn, the great hero, one of the great heroes of the whole story, says, "As man ever has judged, good and ill have not changed since yesteryear, nor are they one thing among elves and dwarves and another among men. It's a man's part to discern them, as much in the Golden Wood as in his own house." So that reminder that good and evil don't change. And what we need most of all is not knowledge or power, but wisdom to discern the difference.
Well, I think that tees up this tweet here. Let me bring it up. This is from our favorite Autism Capital. When humanoid robots can perform every physical task better than you, when AI can perform every mental task better than you, when every single thing a human can do can be done better, what becomes the use of the human? The most important question of our generation. So is that not the most important question, Tim?
It's one of them. I don't know if it's the most important, but it's certainly up there, top five.
Are we projecting too far?
No, I think this is a really significant question, but the answer has not changed, and it doesn't change about what it means to be human. Human nature doesn't change, although our environment changes and we develop in some ways. I think this raises huge questions about very basic things that a lot of people have just taken for granted, about what is work, what's the point of work, what is the family, what is marriage, what are men and women, what are we here for? Does God exist? And how do you relate to God in a world of abundance? Apparently that's coming. Although humans are notoriously bad at predicting the future and of promising all kinds of wonderful things and things going really sideways.
Well, Matt shares a link. Johnny Ive, who we discussed on the last episode, has apparently joined OpenAI, the evil empire. His company was bought for $6.5 billion, and he's now designing an AI pin that I suppose everybody will just wear around. He called it, what's the name for it? Like the third core device or something. So Johnny Ive envisions people needing laptops, phones, and AI pins. And I guess you just have your own personal AI assistant just with you all the time that you can tap on your chest. So what do you think, Matt?
Watching that video, I never saw them describe the item. I think there's been a lot of speculation, but I could be wrong. Did they actually describe it?
I didn't see it from this video. I saw it from like different articles. Maybe it was speculation. I'm not sure.
Yeah. My understanding is there's a lot of speculation and, I saw a very interesting one. I'll share what, if I was sitting with them, I think would be helpful. I think if they're trying to do a totally new thing, like the iPhone was totally new, I think what it needs to be is you're reducing the screen time that you use, maybe not eliminating it, but you're vastly reducing it, which will make my eyes better. You're reducing the weight of carrying the phone and the clunkiness, which Sam does describe in the video. And if I flex my hands to their maximum, I blame the phone for that. That's my maximum stretch on my phone hand versus my left hand. And the third one, which I feel is I haven't heard, but in my view, our ears should become free too. In other words, the AirPods are an amazing thing. Earbuds, I think if we can free up the eyes from the screen and the ears, that'd be amazing. And my plug is bone conduction. Bone conduction for your ears and your voice. And then you can do it quietly. And so anyway, I don't think they described it. It's interesting. It's pretty bold to make such a video and not have something that you're announcing.
So you're saying we should all have like retinal implants and like...
No, the opposite.
Subcutaneous... Okay.
What I'm saying is I understand why it's cool, but I wouldn't love it if they say we're moving to glasses. You know, that's the whole meta thing. I don't...
No. What if it was like in your eye and so only you can see it, but nobody else sees that you see it?
I understand. So you're talking about like contact lenses. You're talking about surgery. Let's go to contact lenses instead.
Well, I mean, presumably Neuralink is just going to make it all magically show up in our field of view, even though there's going to be nothing in the actual wetware.
Yeah, I think the current conversation is one giant step from Neuralink, but I totally see what it is. Is they're reduced... the Neuralink's idea philosophically is the bottleneck between human intelligence and I would include in human intelligence intuition and, of course, our connection to God and things like that versus compute power. The bottleneck times a million is our interface with our computers. And so that in reducing that, the idea behind Neuralink is now we reduce that and it opens everything up. But of course, now you're literally in your head. So the ethical, the questions multiply. But in terms of the next stage, it seems to me like it's probably voice related, you know? And I think a lot of people are ready to not stare at screens and hold their phones.
Jim,
should we be trying to merge with the computers? Seems not like a good idea, guys.
Transhumanism, baby.
How is voice? When I say bone conduction, I had a set of bone conduction headphones in the past, and it was pretty cool because you're hearing with your ears the outside world, and you're hearing what's going on. So like mountain bikers, or maybe not mountain bikers, more like road bikers, wear those so they can still hear their environment, but also hear what they want. I don't think it's moving to transhumanism to take the screen off your eyes and maybe the buds out of your ears. I think that's just AI right there. I don't think that's what their, you know, device.
Well, there was a company that tried to do this. I think it was Humane AI. They had a AI pen, went out of business.
Yep.
Obviously, I don't have as deep of pockets as Sam Altman, but it's like maybe the next step down the road isn't cross the line, but I feel like we cross the line somewhere, right, guys? I mean, at some point, it's like just full consciousness upload into the mainframe and we have no bodies anymore. That's what they want. And it seems like that's not a good thing, seeing as how we are created as embodied souls and meant to live like that for eternity with Jesus, who is also embodied
at this moment.
Could you pull up the Autism Capital tweet again? And I'll riff on this for a moment.
Okay, hang on.
God will work this for good. Because what you see and what this post is saying and how most secular people live their life is that they have a utilitarian view of human nature, right? So the crisis of consciousness, the crisis of meaning comes when the machines replace your doing, right? It's because the view of human nature is we're human doings, not human beings, right? Our identity comes from, well, I accomplished this thing, or I made this amount of money, or
about the thinking? He says every mental task too. What about that side of it?
Oh yeah, no, 100%. That's still utilitarian. What can you accomplish with your mind? What new things can you learn or discover or mentally create or write or storytelling? Like all that, whether it's mental or manual labor, it's a utilitarian view of humanity that says you have value, meaning and worth because you can do stuff. And that's, I would argue that's only a part of what it means to be made in the Imago Dei. Imago Dei, right? Latin for image of God. There is a portion of that that says we are God's stewards, his representatives on earth with a mission to do the work that he's committed us to do. So creation mandate, be fruitful, multiply, subdue the earth. That's a part of Imago Dei, I believe, but fundamentally it's also and Tim, we can debate this, whether it's primary to say, well, it's actually our relationship with God. It's our, the social and being dynamics. It's the eternal soul. It's aspects that are innate to who we are as people made in God's image. Whether or not you're born a paraplegic, whether or not you can't speak or do things, like the use of a human doesn't go down when their usefulness as an economic unit in society goes down.
My doctoral supervisor had this great little thing where he tried to argue that one of the main or primary elements of being made in God's image is dependence, and that this is what Jesus is getting at when he says you have to be like a child, not, you know, you have to be cute or innocent or something like that, but you have to be dependent. Because in the ancient world, children were just future adults. You're waiting for them to get to the point where they could do something productive. And so my supervisor would point out, he said, well, humanity began asleep. God created mankind and breathed life into him, and then put Adam to sleep to make Eve out of him. And so he says, you know, in the Old Testament way of viewing the day begins with nighttime, not the morning. And in Genesis 1 and 2, you begin in sleep, you begin in dependence, you begin in a state almost like death. And so he would say something, sometimes he'd say, you know, I think the person, the comatose 85-year-old in the nursing home, completely dependent on other people, is the best picture of the image of God, because that's what all of us are before God. And our society looks at the 85-year-old in a coma and says, this is disgusting, dispose of them, they're a waste. Yeah. Same with the child, or the unborn.
And is that, in your guys' view, is that a temporary state until the coming of the kingdom? Not that we're not aspiring to be God or be at equal with God, but is that, because of course the death element, the sickness element, that would be gone. Apparently there's no childbirth happening there, so that's gone. We're still praising God as king, but does that element of child being dependent in a very childlike way, is that a kind of the end of that?
I would say no.
Yeah.
That's part of what it means to be human.
Yeah.
And I think last thing to say is the way that God will use it is that all the highly successful, productive people that found their identity in their work and their doing, they'll get stripped of that, and you'll actually be used by God for to humble us and to realize I need to find a meaning and purpose deeper than my vocational work.
Did you guys see this thing with Scott Adams today talking about, you know, he just found out, he announced that he has cancer and he's going to die soon. Did you see this thing today about him, about what's mattered most in his life? He was talking about, he says, you know, at the end of my life, you know, if I were to see my whole entire life flash right before me, before I died, I don't think I'd even think about Dilbert at all, this comic that he's become so famous for. And he says, you know, the thing that's mattered most to me in life is the time I've spent with my stepchildren, of watching them in soccer. And that's been the best part of my life. And, you know, these very basic, simple things of relationship and of family and of children. And yeah, I don't know. I think it cuts the other direction too, in terms of in heaven and the new creation, the most important and the best thing about it is your love for God and your diligence for him. I posted part of a Rudyard Kipling poem on Twitter yesterday where he's talking about, it's the poem is not fantastic. It's a little bit corny, but he's riffing on this idea of the afterlife being endless painting and endless creativity. And he says that after we've rested, we will basically spend all of our eternity painting things for God. And he says, we're not going to do it for money. We're just going to do it for him, and we don't ever get tired of it. And, you know, it's kind of like the way kids draw things for their parents. If you'd say, well, why did you do this? What's the point of this? What's the use of this? What's the value of it? How much is it worth? The kid would be like, what are you talking about? I just wanted to make it for you. I just wanted to do this. Or the way kids play games, you know, what's the point of the game? Why are you playing a game? It's like, well, I don't know. I'm playing a game. It's like its own, the point of the game is to play the game. And I think worship is the same way.
Again, I can't remember who was a preacher. I can't remember who it was, but it's like the sunrise and sunsets. How the sunsets are just like little kids, you know, every day. It's just this most unbelievable, beautiful sunset. And
Chesterton.
Oh, yeah, it was Chesterton. That's right. Again, you know, it was like a little kid asking. Yeah.
I have a story that this morning and yesterday morning, my 3-year-old, first thing in the morning, pops up into bed and says, do you want to hear a story? And proceeds to tell us a story about, you know, like a little doggy who got lost and something, a cat was underwater, you know. And that's 2 days in a row. And what's been happening is my 11-year-old has been going and telling him stories every night. And I have a few I've been doing for him too, but somehow it's caught on to where now the 9-year-old, the 11-year-old are telling the younger one stories, and now she's running into our bed in the morning. So after breakfast, during breakfast, I should say, this morning, I told the kids, I'm so proud of you guys for this. Like, these stories are so awesome. And, you know, God's a storyteller as far as the way he communicates to us. And it's so important to do this. And it makes you smarter. And I said stronger, faster, more deadly. I was exaggerating a little bit. But anyway, it fits right into that. The storytelling is same as painting. You know, it's just doing creation. And I think that the vision of Eden was, you know, wilderness all around, national park, you know, apparently sized thing. Inside the national park is a garden, you know, and those things could be argued, but it's not far from what everybody would agree with, I think. Go forth, multiply, subdue the earth. And I think the idea there is to take God's template of beauty, order, fruitfulness, deliciousness, everything else, and make the wilderness into that kind of a thing. So it's very interesting to think about, if that's our original mandate, which we failed at, our temporary mandate during the church age is to go to all nations and disciple them and baptize them in the name of the Father, Son, Holy Spirit. Seems to me that mandate ends at the coming. Do we return to something similar in actual purpose or in parallel to the Eden mandate? And blessing. It's not just a mandate. It's, you know, he blessed them and he said, go do this.
Jimmy, you got the next one?
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's spend a little time hating on real estate as we usually do. This one's from Osh, Darth Powell, Vlad the Inflator. Minimum household income needed to afford a house at 7% mortgage rates with 10% down and near perfect credit score, highest recommended debt to income ratio, 28%. So the $400,000 to $500,000 range, which is the median home price, you have to make between $139,000 and $173,000 per year. That was Osh. And then Ryan, I think, shared a Luke Gromen post, similar traditional finance consensus. What's the use case for Bitcoin? Allowing millennials to afford a home despite boomer policymakers actively pursuing policies to prevent them from doing so. And then it shows a chart of the median home price as denominated in Bitcoin, which of course is going down and to the right. So this is the chart of millennials eventually being able to buy a house. I was just on a walk like an hour and a half ago with my wife, and she was like, maybe we could buy a house next year. To be clear, we did already own a house, but we sold it and I went all in on Bitcoin. So here we are. All right. What do you guys think?
Also, I'll start with that second one. Actually, I've been laughing over the last week or so just because, you know, the boomer policies that have just caused the real estate market to just continue to go up, artificially low interest rates, things like that. We're in, again, like a historic bubble that hasn't completely popped, but it needs to pop and go down. But like pretty much my entire life, there always will be some sort of program that they'll create to try to lessen the blow or prevent as much of the drop as possible. And I actually heard about it. Oregon announced that we are going to, like, they're having a huge campaign to increase the rate of home ownership in the state. And that is, that's code for, we're going to figure out how to give away as much money as possible to basically, help people get into homes, which is also, another way of saying they're going to try to stop prices from going down. So anyways, there's always a program to soften the blow. Like back in 2012, right after the housing crash, the banks wouldn't allow all the supply onto the market. If you guys remember, like house prices should have gone down in Portland down to like $100,000 a house. Right. But they held like 2 or 3 years worth of supply off the market. And you could just live in a house for as long as you wanted without paying a mortgage. Just because they didn't want to mark, they didn't want too much supply to come out. And so, but that artificially kept the prices instead of dropping all the way down to 100. And I was circling like a shark waiting to buy. it kept it up, you know, it was like 175. Actually, no, it got down to, I want to say there were some houses in like 150, 160 range. And then all of a sudden they came out with this first time home buyer tax credit where they were going to give you $7,500, right? And immediately it added $15,000 or $20,000 to the price of every home on the market. And I remember because I was making offers for houses. So thank you. They stole taxpayer money and gave it away to people buying houses so they could increase the price of the mortgage by $20,000, like literally overnight. So it's going to happen again. But I 100% agree with Luke Groman. And it's not just homes that millennials will need to hold Bitcoin to be able to afford. It's to be able to afford anything because the price of everything is going to keep going up because they're going to have to print so much money in the years ahead. So, and I'm also, I would encourage as many people as have the discipline and the patience to do as Jim is doing and as we are doing also, but just being like, let the market correct. This is a great time to be sitting on the sidelines renting a house.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'll just mention one thing. I looked up the median household income is $80,000, but the chart that Osh sent from Darth Powell says that if you want to be able to afford the median house price, you have to be essentially earning twice that much. So it's pretty out of whack. Now, having said that, I'm not necessarily prescribing that everybody sells their house and live like a vagabond. Not that we're living like vagabonds, but we are renting. There's like a aspect to that that I think the fairer sex struggles with more than we do. Like the idea of nesting. My wife says she's been struggling with not being motivated to nest in a place that she knows is not her own. And at some level, that feels like part of her dominion mandate. And so I do think there is a balance there between, I mean, one argument would just be to say that it doesn't really matter where you live and whether or not you think you're renting, because even if you own, you're still renting it from the government because you're paying property taxes. And but there is kind of a mindset, right, of when you're a renter versus an owner, even though we're never really owning anything. And, you know, we return to dust at the end and we own nothing. We can't take anything with us. So I don't know what the answer is. We're living in a house right now that the owners are wanting to sell. And so I think on paper, people are like, oh, we'll just rent and it'll be great. But then what you kind of forget to factor in is it's like, well, there's other people involved here now that are going to make decisions that might affect whether or not you can stay living there and stay renting there. Even if you want to, they may not want you to. So that's a problem.
Yeah, there's a vibe and, you know, like Old Testament promise of you're going to plant your vine and eat from your vine. And you're going to, you know, you're going to have animals and you're going to dig your own wells and I don't know, fill in the details. But there is a thing of like, I'm eating Ryan's bananas now because he sold me his house. They're delicious. And jackfruit about to go.
And so, planted the banana tree for the plant.
I feel like we had this conversation maybe like three or four pods ago, and I brought up the image of stealing the gold from the Egyptians. I should say reclaiming the gold from the Egyptians. And the more I thought about it since then, I'm like, it's actually a great picture of our time because God tells the Israelite women, I think, to go and ask their masters, their Egyptian masters, for their gold jewelry and all that kind of stuff. And at that point, the Egyptians are just absolutely terrified of the Lord because of the 10 plagues. And so they give them all their gold. And when I thought about this picture, this is gold. This is wealth that was earned by the slavery of Israel. And so when it comes to our moment of, I really hate to 100% hate on the boomers because it's not like each boomer was in on a conspiracy, you know? So I don't know if saying boomers is the right way to put it, but let's say the wealth that was stolen generationally from the future is potentially being reclaimed now. And unfortunately, in some ways, it's like stealing the wealth of the Egyptians as you go into the promised, well, we go still into the wilderness, but as you get out of slavery, right? And I think there's a lot of imagery there to hang on to. And so part of that is like, do we just say, this is all corrupt? You know, this is one way that you could think about it, which I sympathize with. This is all corrupt. The banking system, the insurance system, the real estate system, it's all corrupt. I'm just not going to participate in it, you know? And the other way would be to say, well, they took all of your wealth that you would and your wealth you'd never earned through that kind of slavery. And so, again, if they're offering this kind of stuff, or if the house prices fall like crazy and you're able to position yourself ahead of time to buy when it goes like that, then you might actually end up, there's always going to be a way to profit from the real estate market. If it's down, hopefully you buy. If it's, you know, and I, in sympathy to the majority of people who are on a some type of salary or W-2 situation, obviously not everybody is able to say, oh, I'm just going to position myself to do well. Totally understand that. But if you're aware of the process that's happening, you may be able to make some smart decisions. And I would encourage Christians, if you're able to kind of grok it, consider that the system may work for you. And I have a funny phrase I came up with the other day along with Jordan, money printer go breed, you know, money printer go burr. Well, they're going to start funding breeders also. So it's money printer go breed, and it's money. It might be money printer go breeders as well as people who can help save these homes and real estate when the time comes. Rant over.
But then you have to be frugal after you breed, because otherwise it's like the stimulus from 2020 where they give you $1,200 and then you get a permanent 40% cost of living increase. And so you get a little check from the government after you have a kid, and then you go bankrupt because.
But it isn't spread evenly across everybody. It's spread to you could say negatively, it's redistributed, right? That's the part we don't like, is it's still taking money from everybody and redistributing it, but it will likely be redistributed towards people who are having children, as well as people who are able to, steward and manage resources.
So let's talk practical advice real quick about real estate. So I've been in the market. We have this, the issue that we face is we bought a house right at the bottom trough of the market. And so low interest rates, we got a great price on the house. We've been in it a while, lots of equity, but we've outgrown it. So I've just had my eighth kid. And so the quality of life has become a challenge around the amount of space that we have to live in. And so I'm talking to my loan broker friends, I'm talking to my realtor friends, and none of them in the industry think the prices are going to crash. And as I'm talking to my loan friend, I'm saying like, okay, yeah, what options are there? I was asking my realtor friend, I said, are you hearing about anyone accepting low ball offers? Because I pulled up the Zillow in my area and I'm looking for property. I'm looking for a big enough house, and I organize it by what's been on the market the longest. So I'm looking at 400, like between 200 and 400 days on the market, and hardly anyone has dropped prices. They're just sitting on their properties, and so I'm like, what gives? And I ask him, and I'm like, are there low balls? Like, why are these houses staying here for so long? And he says, oh yeah, they're going to wait until they get the offer they want because they have to turn around and get another one of these 7% loans. So there's no way that they're going to lose their house and then not be able to get into the house that they feel like they need after they sell. And so I'm like, so what's the solution? Like, literally, it's only the wealthy widow
that's moving out of her house into assisted living, right? Like there's really, the only option is you're moving out of the home ownership market. If you're going to stay in home ownership, that interest rate applies to everyone. And so I'm just wondering, like, okay, practical advice. So I've outgrown my house and I look at rentals, and at least in my area, they're all crazy. I have to be willing to pay an extra $1,000 to $2,000 more than my mortgage to get into just a little bigger house.
Hang on. What would it be if I was moving to Portland and looking at buying at 7% mortgage rates versus renting those rentals? What would it be for me? Would I be paying more or less rental or mortgage?
So for the same house, I think right now probably at the interest rates, the mortgage is more because you're looking at above.
How much more?
I'd want to do the
math. Here it's twice, 2x.
To buy versus renting.
Monthly expense is 2x to buy versus rent.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that makes, like, so the tweet that I shared, I mean, the price, it says for an $800,000 house, you need $273,000 a year salary. It's not telling you what the monthly is. But yeah, it's going to be more expensive to buy that house right now.
I mean, at the end of the day, like all they can do is lower the rates, but that only solves the problem in the short term because then prices are just going to keep going back up, right? So at the end of the day, the only real solution to this in the long term is real estate needs to be demonetized. And we all know that if Bitcoin takes over, that's what's going to happen. And so the question that I keep coming back to is, for all of my life, buying real estate has been sort of the safe haven. You can't go wrong. It's a good financial decision play. And now, because of what we know as Bitcoiners, it feels like you're wrecking yourself. And so at what point is it just kind of like, I'm going to buy this thing and it's going to go down in value, but whatever, because I have to provide my family with a house and my wife needs to fulfill her dominion mandate and we need to like be able to plant gardens and, you know, whatever. It is what it is. It's just like, we live in a new world where real estate just goes down into the right instead of up into the right. I'm asking myself that question. Is it like 10% of my wealth, 50% of my wealth, 5% of my wealth? Like what percentage of my wealth should I just be willing to sort of flush down the toilet? And the only thing I get out of it is my dwelling. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Dude, I think that's a great way to frame it. I think it's literally like we're called to live with our wives in an understanding way, and we can probably tolerate more of living in a tiny cardboard box than they can. And yeah, I think it's each couple, it's going to be a little bit different.
I think the idea that you shared, yeah, right, the solution for the millennial is, it's like, yeah, you're going to lose value on the real estate, but because you're in Bitcoin, you're making up for it by being in Bitcoin. And so maybe that really is the only solution. It's just like, yeah, if you're going to go long real estate, then you essentially have to be long Bitcoin at the same time because it offsets your inevitable real estate losses, right?
Yeah. Well, and at least like I don't think most millennials can even buy real estate, period, right now. I mean, we're literally at the most unaffordable time in history. And so Bitcoin.
Well, yeah, of course. Like the median household income is 80,000 and you got to have 160 to buy the median house.
And isn't that interesting that it is almost exactly twice that it's like, so it requires two. So we basically, the whole thing is a scam. It literally, like, that's the, it can't go more than a two income household, basically.
Well, right? Median household income based on all the income, not just the one person?
I think it is.
So dual income is actually 80. It's not like they're getting 160.
Yeah. I don't know. Let's someone grok that.
Wait a minute. I thought that was per.
I thought it was household, right? It's like the household income.
Yeah. I just ran a grok on the question that was earlier about, and it said rental prices would be much cheaper than mortgage right now in Portland. I gave the example of a $700,000 house.
What did it, yeah, what did it say the rent versus the payment was?
Well, part of the problem is that $700,000 could be an apartment in certain places, and it could be a house in other places. But it said, average-wise, the monthly payment for a $700,000 home, I did 20% down. I don't know if that's too high down, but would be $49.17. That's after everything with insurance and stuff. This is significantly higher than current rental prices, which could range from the low end, $1,500 to $1,700 for apartments, larger apartments or small houses, to $2,500 to $3,000 for houses that are comparable to a $700,000 property.
Yeah, yeah. So let's just call it like half. So again, this is what I keep going back to, is the rent price is the ground truth for the utility value of the real estate, because all you're getting is the roof over your head, which is what the point of the real estate is. So everything else is the monetary premium. And
that's a good phrase.
As Bitcoiners, we know something that is better to put our monetary premium in, right? And so it's like, we're just loath to like put any money into something else as a monetary premium.
Now, this will correct, though, you know, so I feel like we're all...
What do you mean it's going to correct? They're going to try and pump it up, right?
Yeah, but I mean, I'm interested, actually, I think the last time we talked, Jim, you've mentioned you think the real estate crash is going to not be so quick, like not this year, but like stretched out. And
I think real estate is the final boss, just in terms of the total market cap, right? And so it's like, I think the real estate crashing or being demonetized is going to be the most painful, even more painful than like the bond meltdown that's currently happening, you know, as according to Robert Kiyosaki or whatever, who knows if it's actually happening, but that's what they say is happening. It's failed bond auctions right now. Like those at some level can be just papered over because they can just print money and buy the bonds, right? But if the government starts printing money to buy real estate, like you can't paper over that, because who's living in those houses at that point?
Sorry, real quick. My confidence in the correction is in part because it's an entire generation. So this is not just a special interest group. It's not just like Republicans or Democrats. It's literally a generation that's like, we can't buy houses. We don't have any vision that we can start a family and buy a house. And because of that, I think that force is going to be a sort of tidal wave, but it doesn't suggest itself to any particular time frame. But in my mind, it'd be like not longer than 5 years would be a huge correction, especially relating to Bitcoin.
You're muted.
So
sorry. Are you saying millennials are going to demand that the government do something?
Well, they're going to be in government. They're going to be in their careers. The people are going to be dying off. At the same time, houses, just those things, I think will bring a sort of flood into the market, which they're going to try to fake, you know, hold it
but
back.
But it's like interesting because like as a millennial, what would I be demanding the government do? Crash the market so I can afford to buy it, or like slam rates down to zero so I can afford the payment? Like what is my demand?
I think the biggest thing is I think the younger generation is going to start, calling out interventions. And I think
you're saying they want the interventions?
No, they don't want the interventions. Literally, like I was talking earlier, it's like no more like subsidies. Like, for example, as the boomers are selling off their houses in the next 15 years, most of them, and they own most of the houses, a lot of real estate is about to come on the market. I think that's going to bring prices down. And if you can't bring, like if they drop interest rates like they did, you know, the ZERP, you know, we'll have runaway inflation. It'll blow up the whole system. And we're already kind of teetering on the edge. So I don't think they're going to be able to drop interest rates very much. Real estate prices are going to have to give, in my opinion. And
needs to be repriced. You're just saying reprice it.
Yep, 100%. And I'm in rural Oregon and it's already happening. Like I get the little alerts and it's like $20,000 drop, $30,000 drop. Like we're in the middle of it right now.
Osh, as an owner, are you wanting to go short real estate?
I mean, we really just want a big enough place. And so
what if your place was currently totally fine?
Yeah, so the challenge is the interest rate that we sit on and how low our monthly payment is I have to be willing to significantly increase my monthly outflow for housing to move out of the house. So like this is, our place is the closest we can get to living in a like a cheap cardboard box as we can. Like we cannot make our housing expenses less than it is right now.
But presumably you could get something similar by renting. It's the same amount of monthly expense.
No way. If I put my house on the market to rent, I will net probably 80% value. I'll make a good profit above my mortgage.
Okay. In your specific area.
Because of my low interest rates on my loan, because I've refinanced it strategically, my actual payment is about probably 60% of the going rental value of it.
If you knew your house was going to be worth half in 10 years, would it change your mind?
So yeah, that is one argument. But again, it's a speculative argument of playing the odds. And
okay, how about just the equity that's in your house being in Bitcoin instead of the house?
Yeah. So, but then that's a refinance, and you refinance when you get a better rate. You don't refinance into a 7% rate.
You can get a HELOC.
Well, right, but you refinance into a 7% rate whenever you can put it into Bitcoin and earn 50%.
Well, let me speak to this, because this is something I'm literally in the middle of. I'm in the middle of talking to two banks locally about doing a HELOC.
And yeah, or HELOC. I'm more open to that. I'm more open to a HELOC.
And right now, I don't know why, but the rates are like 5.5 to like 5.9 if you do a if you do a longer 5-year term or whatever. And I explained it to my wife, and you know, when it comes to the attitude towards my home, I love my home. I consider it my home. At the right price, I would sell it. Also, and I might be one of those Portland people, Osh, who just has it on the market and people are like, why doesn't he lower it down? Because I'm only going to sell it if I get such and such amount, and otherwise I'm happy. In that case, and you guys can correct my math if I'm wrong, the only thing you're really risking is if it's in Bitcoin, is you're risking if the Bitcoin has major problems we can't foresee, and you're risking the percentage, like 6%. And other than that, you could liquefy your Bitcoin if you couldn't make the payments, if I wasn't able to work or whatever. You can liquefy the Bitcoin back and pay the loan down so you don't lose your house. But from an attitude perspective, I even want to have the attitude of, if you love something, let it go. If it comes back to you, it's yours. Is that Mariah Carey or something? I don't know. But the idea of, hey, let's take a risk, and I don't think I'm going to lose the house, but, I don't know what else to say about that. But I will say one thing about, because Osh's particular situation is tricky. Going back to Tolkien, the wise elves do not like to give advice. That was the quote I was going to read. But as far as general advice, there's also a huge difference between the city and the country. So there's a massive difference in there. And
like you're saying, be willing to move to the country?
Yes, but I hate
to... Ryan, like I said,
you know...
Yeah,
the Hobbit says the elves will say both yes and no. So that's what I'm saying.
You got to give up your idol, Osh. Your idol is the city.
No, it's not. Ryan sends me rental houses. He's like, look at this place in my neighborhood. And it's so much cheaper than my city.
Yeah, I guess at the end of the day, I think... The amount of monetary premium that's in real estate right now, I don't know if it'll ever be higher than what we see right now. And so I'm pretty convinced that real estate's about to be demonetized.
What's your time frame on that?
It's already happening. I mean, it's already starting to go down. Not everywhere at the same pace, but it's
going. Yeah, but like real estate went down in the great financial crisis and then bounced back.
Yeah. I just, the tools they have to cause it to go back up. I mean, I honestly don't think there is the will to try to push real estate any higher. And I'll just say this.
Well, it's not that they're going to do that, but you know they're going to slam rates.
I I think it's going to be them slowly letting the air out of a tire. So it's kind of like they'll try to prevent it from just completely crashing, which I think we could easily see, and they'll do whatever they can to prevent that. But
you're saying they're not going to slam rates. You're saying they're going to ease the rates down.
Maybe just a little bit, but I don't think it's going to make much of a difference because you have the boomers that are going to be out of, I think they own, 40% of the homes in the U.S.?
Well, all they got to do is just give 0% loans.
I don't think they can do it again.
With the bond market issues, with the credit rating reduction, with the auctions not going well.
It's over.
They can't find buyers if they lower the rate.
I'm just saying that's effectively them papering over it, you know, like just giving us all 0% loans, because then there are people to live in them. It's people taking the 0% loans. I'm just saying if this is going to happen over 10 to 20 years, you know, looking at my own state where I've got kids that are going to be in my house for the next 5 to 10 years, it's like, well, okay, it's a slow motion train wreck. This is their childhood. I just need to suck it up for 5 or 10 years and kind of own a house during that time period. And then when I go empty nest, I can get rid of it again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what's your guys' advice? So Ryan showed the chart that houses are getting cheaper with Bitcoin.
The problem with that is that you never want, they're going to keep getting cheaper. So you never want to jump in because you're like, well, it's going to be cheaper next year.
Okay. So then let's talk family structure and life structure. And
you know what the funny thing about that is? That's how it's supposed to be with everything else. Like your $500 LCD TV should get cheaper next year. And you could wait till next year until it is cheaper. And it's like, you know what? I'd like to watch Outdoor Boys on a 65-inch flat screen. And
instead of it backwards, they want the new iPhone because they want to flex on everybody, you know?
But the crazy thing is, I mean, on a Bitcoin standard, that's going to happen to everything. We're actually going to experience deflation in prices for the first time whenever the Federal Reserve was created, and they've stolen all the technological or all the gains basically from all innovation.
So what's the way online here? The guys on the bottom side of the screen.
Yeah.
The guys on the bottom side of the screen are renting. The guys on the top side of the screen are owning. And we don't agree with each other. Is that what we're saying?
Well, you know, sats are still money that is meant to be used for life and for investing in the future kingdom sats. You know, stack up your sats in heaven where it does not get stolen on LastPass, you know? So it's still meant for that purpose. And part of that is family. So maybe in my heart, it's like, get the attitude that your house is a home for you and your family first. Now you can say, okay, what's appropriate? What's the right size? How much freedom do I want? You know, in my last two homes, I've built custom beds into the room that are like designed in the room and stuff. You can't do that in a rental, you know? So I'm always doing crazy stuff like that. And
you can, but you can't. Just a little bit of construction on the way up.
And hopefully for Christians who have the potential to think these things through, I would say there are some Egyptian gold stealing tactics that can be used as the crash happens too. Some of them are higher risk tolerance stuff, but it's good to think about those things now. And both Osh and I, like, my house is not going to go under it compared to what I built, put into it because of my situation. And Osh is in a good, not a good situation because he said it's too small, but in a good financial situation.
Yeah. So I'm with my other fellow homeowner here that, yeah. And my advice to a young person or someone that has some Bitcoin and has to decide, hey, am I going to put this in a down payment for a house? And I would say wait as long as you can, like withhold that decision as long as you can. And yet there does come a point where your Bitcoin wife comes to you and says, now, can we? Is it okay? Can we now buy the house? And part of loving your wife, part of giving.
Wait, is that what a Bitcoin wife says?
Okay. That's a good question. The bigger principle is, right, are you shepherding your family well? Are you getting kicked out of your rental? And is it this the third time that that's happened because the housing market is unstable and people are trying to sell? Is there a lot better place, like a church, and you're like, okay, we don't have a solid church near us? Well, you find a way to move. If it's like, there's a number of reasons that you would say, let's find a house that we can build ourselves, so we can buy and have as our own. But it shouldn't be, oh, this is a good investment. This is going to take us to the future. And this is the stair step to
what I'm saying
to wealth.
That's exactly what I'm saying too. And you know, Wealth Squad, Chris, who's a Bitcoiner, cool African-American dude online, he says it like, make money by Bitcoin. And in other words, if you make money in the military, if you make money in real estate, however you make money, make it. You don't have to get out of the system completely, but just make sure you're saving it in, they should have on there, I trust my husband too.
Is this really the Bitcoin life?
I told my wife, hey, hun, is it okay if I do such and such? I'll let you know it when we're either poor or rich.
Yeah.
She said, I trust you, babe. Go for it. Okay. That's all I need.
Wait, here's a more nuts and bolts question for you guys. What percentage of one's wealth should, and I'm specifically asking this about the equity in a home. What percentage of a person's wealth should be tied up in real estate?
Like, are you saying just your roof over your head, your dwelling?
Yeah, and should it be considered? Like, and I'm just saying, like, talking wisdom, because I definitely think there's a case that real estate gets demonetized and we could see a pretty significant drop. Some of it because the world is slowly waking up to Bitcoin, that it's a vastly superior store of value than real estate. It doesn't have maintenance. It's not exposed to the whims of the state, and 100 other reasons. So that's happening as we're seeing. So I believe real estate is already starting that demonetization process. What happens when people wake up more, and what happens when everyone's starting to rush for the exits? So there is totally a case for people to have the real estate portfolio like significantly decline. And so in that scenario, or with that understanding, like, is it, what, like, what's a wise amount to have
in real estate? I don't know if I would look at it like an amount as much as I would look at it as a cash flow.
Yes.
Like what percentage of your monthly cash flow is the right percentage to be the roof over your head? And obviously it's something between infinitesimal and 100%. I mean, if it's above 100%, you're a slave. So
I think there's a slight difference in the framing there. So Ryan's saying essentially as an investment, not the roof over your home. If a person's worth, let's say, $500,000 or whatever, just to use a number, how much of that should be in, like, if you were to use this typical stuff, like it would be like real estate, bonds, yep, stocks, right?
So I don't think any percentage of your primary residence should be an investment.
So that's a heart and mind thing too, because now I'm on the side where it is in real estate. My situation is very different from most because I developed each one of those. So they're not going to go under in terms of value. And I'd like to even twist the frame a little bit more and say, what's your job? Because if your job is you have 4 rental properties, that's okay. I don't think you have to say, I have to sell this and buy Bitcoin. That's your quote unquote job.
Yeah, rental properties are fine. I just mean your primary residence should be for housing you, not for making money.
Right. And that's a heart. And that, I'm trying to make a division there. That's a heart thing, too. I'm not about, there's the rental, there's the home that you live in. But then there's also the Bitcoin perspective, which I don't despise, of like, even your rentals, just sell it if you get the right amount and put it straight into Bitcoin because that's going to give you a better return. I respect that position. That's the Finlayian position. But at the same time, you still need to have some income. So is that, you know, yesterday I was driving a skid steer. Is it driving a skid steer? Is it missions? Is it, you know, tech?
Well, and so yeah, to be clear, like I'm not selling my company. Like my company spins off cash flow and I have to have that cash flow in order to maintain my Bitcoin position.
That's a great example. So you could sell your company for X amount, put it straight into Bitcoin for, you know, the revolution and the profits, but you're not. And that's a great example. So for some people, that will be equivalent to their income comes from rentals, real estate. And to me, that's not a problem, but you do have to take a sober look at it and say, well, what if I could get this much for it? And, you know, point made.
But, yeah.
I think the answer is you're trying, as a percentage of your monthly expense, you're trying to spend the least amount of money you possibly can on the roof over your head.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, then I'm in the solution then, and I just have to find a way to make it work. Because I can't get any cheaper than what I have right now.
No, there's another way. You can earn more money.
Yeah.
Let's talk afterwards, Jim.
I just think there's a way to reduce housing expense by moving out of the city. And I think
the city where all the jobs are, though.
Or just close by. Obviously, every single person's situation is different. So it's...
Well, you're trading time for money then. I mean, I know people work at home and stuff, but like, at some level, if you move out and you have to drive into the city for the job, then you're just trading your time for money.
Yeah. I'm more talking like the big cities like Portland, Seattle. Like there's the cities where you're paying like it's what, double? It's probably double the price just for the privilege of working and living in that city. So
yeah, but if you're like my Amazon or Microsoft software engineer, they're paying you $1 million a year to live there basically.
Yeah. Anyways, I'll just say that for those that can move out and that can that are able to move, getting the equity out of your home now and being able to buy two or three Bitcoin and renting for the next 5 years, I think will probably go down as the wisest decision someone could like. I mean,
especially if you're single, for sure.
But that's still in a category, that's in the category of possibly the best financial decision. But the financial element of it is only one element of life. So if in prayer and in consideration, the Hawthorne family says, you know, going back to the whole deathbed thing, you know, deathbed Scott Adams and deathbed all of us, and we look back and we say, I'm glad I was able to minister with my family in this situation, and God opened doors and God did this and that. So it complicates it. It doesn't change that potential financial picture, but it does you have to bring a lot of wisdom to the table because it's the same for me. Do I see a story unfolding in my life that seems to be guided by God and it's according to his principles and his word? And if so, I want to pay attention to the financial element, but I don't want to be a servant to only that part of life. That makes it very difficult.
I 100% agree. Ultimately, you have to do what's best for your family. I just don't like, so, yeah, I mean, obviously Ash and I have talked about this a lot behind the scenes. So, just whatever you and your wife come to a conclusion is like, what is best and where you flourish the most.
We bought a house in 2014. In Austin, sold it in 2020. If I still lived and owned that and lived in and owned that house right now, I probably wouldn't sell it. So,
and why is that?
Well, I think it's just really easy to be like, I'm renting, so everybody should rent. You know, it's so great. I get to have all my monetary premium in Bitcoin. Ha ha ha. And it's like, there's a lot of aspects to it that are really not pleasant. And I think those do outweigh at some level, at least for my situation, because it's not like the vast majority of my wealth or something is tied up or would have been tied up in that house. For me, it's actually the vast majority of my wealth is tied up in my company. And it's my company is illiquid. Like I can't, it's a startup company, right? Like, it, I mean, it has revenues and it has value, but like, if I want to get the value out of it, I can't just take a HELOC on it. It's like, I got to go sell the whole thing. And at some level I'm like slaying the golden goose. Right. And so, to me, it's like talking about selling the house or something in the context of having this other thing over here that's like 10 times bigger than a house. It's like, well, the house is a rounding error. So like, really, if I'm going to be honest with myself, it's like, why am I not selling my company and putting it all into Bitcoin, you know? And I do ask myself that question a lot, you know, because it's like, it could go down as a genius move. But on the other hand, it's like, there's a lot of people depending on me to like provide for them. And it just, maybe if I was single or something, but I just
can't. Meta Switching Company will love them just like you do, I think. You know?
Yeah.
But I think one frame, and this is, by the way, this is exactly where I am in my life. You know, this house, my commercial, I have a commercial property I ran that basically was given to us for ministry. The question is also, what's the price? You know what I mean? And there doesn't have to be one. It's okay if the conviction is it's not time. But you can also say, I would sell for this much, otherwise I'm not going to.
Well,
you
know, right. And it's the same thing with companies, right? It's like, if I was going to go try and get my company sold, it's going to be a much lower price than if somebody wants to come buy my company. And so in the same thing with real estate, it's like, yeah, you can list it on the market for the make me move price, because that's essentially people coming and buying it from you, as opposed to, no, I'm going to price it at what the market demands right now if I want to get this thing sold. And so it's just like, yeah, it's not... To me, my company is worth more to me than what probably most people are willing to pay me, in the same way that your houses are worth more to you than what most people are willing to pay you. And so we're just sort of playing the cards that were dealt. And all that having been said, I think there's a lot of gravity to just being where you're at. There's a lot of reasons why you are where you're at. God has you where you're at for a reason. And that's not to say that he never stirs you up and makes a change or whatever. I mean, if you roll the clock back to 2020, it's like, why did we sell our house? Well, the reason we sold our house back then was because the company that's currently my golden goose, I had just started and it wasn't making any money. And I had to sell the house. It was choose between keep the house and go get a job at Google or something, or sell the house and double down and try to make this company work. And, you know, I think God sort of took me to the edge, the precipice, and held me over it and said, where's your heart? Are you trusting in me? And in that time, at that place, and this is, again, right in the middle of like COVID, right? This is like May 2020. It was, okay, all right, Lord, I give it all up. I'm selling everything. It's in your hands. I don't know what's going to happen. And then that just started this path to where I'm at. And it's like, I can't prescribe that to other people necessarily, because that was like unique to me at that time and what I'm doing. And so it's like other people, yeah, you got 8 kids. I mean, you're...
And this is why elves don't give advice, by the way. Exactly what you're saying.
Yeah. Now, having said that, this is on a podcast, right? Because we have no idea who's listening and how they're going to take it. Obviously, if we're in person, we get to know you. We can understand the context. We can pray with you. I think there can be, like, we could give you like individual advice. So I'm happy to do that for
people.
There's a point
I want to riff on that you just said, Jim. And by the way, it's funny you said that. I was just going, hey, this isn't a Zoom call. This is a podcast. I was just reminding myself. So anybody that's out there, as well as these guys here, there is a question, and this is a question in my heart. Maybe everybody, actually, so many people I talked to in 2025 are in the same place. I don't know if it's like a corporate trauma process from 2020 or what, but the question is this the end of a season and the beginning of a new season? Or is this a time for perseverance? you know? And that's a big question.
That could be different for anybody, you know?
That's what I
like.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
And that's my point, is that's a question you have to ask. And I'm asking myself, if I go back to 25-year-old Matt for 20 years ago, probably the way I would view my gifts and my contribution to the world at that time is probably the same that I would when I'm 95. And the question, and I don't know that I'm exactly doing those gifts. You know what I mean? So is it time to have an end of season, like you described in Austin? End of a season, start of another season. Guess what? Your business was blessed after all, right? But the Bible also has a lot to say about perseverance and getting through that valley and stuff like that. So that's a call for wisdom, but that's two things you can pray on is, am I coming to the end of a season and it's in the beginning of another season? Or is this just like the valley of despond or the slough or whatever they call it, the snow of despond? And it doesn't even have to be about depression, but is this just something I need to push through and then it's going to get great when I push through it, you know?
I think you do have to be careful though, because you can look back with 2020 and say, because like in my case, we sold the house in May and then the company started making money in July of 2020. Looking back, it's like, well, if I knew that it was going to start making money, like just a couple months later, I probably wouldn't have sold. But that was obviously the Lord's plan. And so it's like, also, if I hadn't have sold, again, it's God who makes it rain. So it's, to me, it's almost like if I had sort of hardened my heart and entrenched myself there, it's very likely that God could have just decided, no, I'm not going to make it rain. And then therefore, you're going to have to go and toil in the fields of Meta or Facebook, you know, Google or Microsoft or whatever, and sell your soul to the evil empire, you know? And it's like, you can't look back and just be like, well, now that I know, I wish I would have done it this other way. It's like, no, that was the only way. The only way was selling my house. And that's exactly what God had planned for me, you know?
Yeah. But like you said, you can't see it ahead of time.
No.
Man. So this has been a great conversation. We did riff on the real estate question again. I think it's pretty close to time. Is there a final meme or funny post or just something like...
It was the wife meme. I brought it up. You guys have any other wife memes? I told my wife, you know, because she's... Price is ripping right now, you know? And I was just like... There was the wife meme from like 6 months ago where it's, hey, if Bitcoin hits 100,000, can we go out to a nice breakfast? I'm like, yeah, that's nice breakfast. You know, buying a house, nice breakfast. Yeah, nice breakfast.
Yeah, we're going to Europe this summer, and I'm going to do my very, very best to not sell a single sat, you know? So wish me luck, guys. We decided to cancel. What did we do? We decided to cancel the France leg of our journey.
Was it too expensive?
No, we kind of decided to trade off. We're doing like a family... organ cleanse, like just overall like dietary cleanse, and that's going to be about, you know, x amount of dollars, and it's kind of equal. So it's like, okay, we're not going to France, we're going to prioritize this, but I'm going to do my best not to sell any of my sats, but I will if I have to.
Well, that's a good place to end.
I have a solution for that one. My wife also wants to go to Europe. The way you don't sell sats is you just buy MicroStrategy and then you sell MicroStrategy. So you're not selling sats, you're just selling stock.
Oh, okay. My conscience can be clear. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Sorry, you can land it.
Yeah, well, this has been great. Good talking. Thank you guys for joining us on the To the Unknown pod. We did indeed talk about everything under the sun, and hopefully it's fruitful and helpful to folks. And if Jordan was here, he'd tell you should come and hang out at the TGFB barbecue next week.
Oh, yeah.
Vegas.
That's worth mentioning. So we're going to be there. Most of us, Ryan, you're going to be there too, right?
Yep.
So yeah. You guys are watching and
we
want
to sneak him in. It's a little too expensive for Ryan. He doesn't want to sell his Bitcoin. So we got to sneak.
Well, so there's the TGFB barbecue, which you should definitely come to, but there's also there's Airbnbs and there's the event and the Venetian. And so if you're going to be in Vegas, even if you're not coming to the TGFB barbecue, we're going to be there. So we'd love to connect.
Yeah, we would. DM us. I think all of our DMs are open on Twitter. So DM us. And Matt's in Hawaii. He'll probably answer DMs too. But He won't be in Vegas because he's going to Europe. But yeah, this is awesome.